Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Amy McQuire with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations people all across the country. I'd like to acknowledge my elders past and present and the elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to our listeners if you tuned in across the nation via the National Indigenous Radio Service. And if you're listening on our website, 989fm.com.au, or on our podcast a bit later, welcome to you as well. And I really hope everyone had a safe and wonderful Easter break, and I hope everyone has a good working week coming back from that holiday. I know I find it hard after Easter to come back. But first of all, we're talking about a really important topic today, and I actually think it's one of the most dangerous myths that could be in Australia today. And that's when you're pregnant, maybe one glass of wine is okay. Maybe it's okay to have a little bit in moderation. Surely it couldn't harm the baby. Sadly, this is untrue. Researchers currently don't know for sure how much alcohol can affect a fetus. It can lead to alcohol-related development disorders. It can lead to brain damage. Now, on this show, we have talked a lot about how fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, FASD, has affected Aboriginal communities specifically across the country, and Aboriginal women are currently world leaders in researching this topic. I'm thinking not only of the work conducted in Fitzroy Crossing by strong women like June Oscar and Emily Carter, but also by Dr. Jeanette Hemmel, one of the leading researchers of this topic, a First Nations woman, and a regular guest on this show. But Dr. Hemmel has consistently said this is not solely an Aboriginal problem. In fact, where we really need to focus our attention is on the white middle class of this country. Now, the statistics she cites are absolutely frightening. Research has shown that as many as 30 babies a day could be born in Australia with alcohol spectrum disorders. She says that from 2004 to 2013, amongst the total of 2,900,000 births in Australia, a conservative estimate is just under 105,000 of these children, which could be born with brain damage due to alcohol exposure before birth. And what's the federal government doing about this? And why isn't there more of an awareness campaign? Today we're joined by a strong mother, Sam Pennell, who actually runs the Queensland FASD support group, who's going to tell us specifically her story. We have Sam on the line at the moment. How are you this morning?
Good, thanks, Amy. How are you?
Very good, and thank you so much for being on the program today. I wanted to start by asking a bit of your background. I know you're currently living around the Gold Coast. I mean, have you always lived around that area? What's your sort of, where are you from and what's
your story?
Yeah, I
was actually born in Southport and I'm still here.
Oh, great. So happy to be there. It's a nice part of the world. So
I love it, yeah.
First of all, I want to ask you a bit about your story and your contact with FASD, because you're currently, how many children do you have, first of all?
I have four biological children, and my nephew, who I'm raising, is my son.
And when did you start to come into contact with this problem called FASD?
When I had my first four children, I had never heard of it. Then when I was so lucky to be given the gift of my nephew that I'm raising as my son. He's now eight. I sort of noticed from day one that he was a little bit different in a lot of things that he did in his sleeping patterns, his behaviour, his hyperactivity and just different things, you know. And I went to a lot of different places and saying, you know, there's something wrong, there's something different, but nobody would listen. And I sort of started noticing that a lot of traits that he had were the same as my oldest son, but I just thought, you know, once he was diagnosed with ADHD, my oldest son was also diagnosed with ADHD when he was about the same age as what Jasper is.
And what age was that?
Around seven.
Oh, right. So when you started to realise some of these symptoms, the sort of hyperactivity, he was younger than seven, was he, or he was
He'd always been hyperactive. Both the boys had been, because my oldest son is now 35, and I was just having like little flashbacks to little things that he did, but didn't sort of think too much of it. I just thought it's the ADHD. Anyway, I ended up hearing about FASD, and I did a bit of research, and thought, wow, that ticks all the boxes, every single one of it for my youngest son. So I got in contact with the clinic where Dr. Shelton runs, and Jasper was taken in and had all the testings done over the couple of days. And then a week or two later, he was diagnosed with FASD and ADHD, and that was a really hard day of getting that diagnosis, because biologically he's my nephew, and my sister had drank every day in that pregnancy, sort of maybe between 10 to 12 cans of rum a day, and I still hadn't even heard of FASD back then.
And I assume that
when they told me that he had a permanent brain injury, my world just fell apart. I was absolutely devastated. I think I cried for 3 days straight on getting that diagnosis and hearing that word, permanent brain damage.
Yeah.
It really shatters you hearing that happen to your child.
It's amazing to me that you actually had to, I guess, you found out about this thing called FASD first, and then you took it to a clinic and said this might be the case with your nephew. Is that
what happened? Yeah, it was just like talking to someone who I think had spoken to someone else, and when I was telling her, you know, how his behaviour was, and I was so sick to death of going to psychologist and paediatrician and all these different clinics of things that help with kids to try and figure out what was wrong, like what was going on, why was he so different? Because things that he was doing, you know, besides his ADHD, he was very forgetful, he was very uncoordinated. There's just so many little things, like when you add them, he had a big problem with sleeping. He never slept.
Yeah.
And then they would just say, oh, he's just not sleeping because he's hyperactive. And when he got diagnosed, everything kind of made sense then. And I had to talk to all the team that worked in that clinic and sort of started to put it all together and realise exactly what FASD was. And he fitted every single solitary thing that was in there, and it was incredible just to finally have a diagnosis, because for all these years I had been trying, and I kept thinking that I was doing something wrong.
Yeah.
What was I doing wrong? I even went and started to and completed doing a diploma of counselling, just because I thought I was talking to him wrong or doing things different, and feeling so bad as a mother that I felt like I was failing this child because I couldn't help him. I didn't understand, do you know, how his brain was thinking.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing was that, I guess even, I'm not saying for your family, but other families might find it very easy to blame the child as well, to just think they're being a bit of a delinquent and, you know, it's
definitely
a phase they're going to go through.
Definitely. And I had some family members who would say to me, oh, he's just a little brat, you know, give him to us for a week and we'll sort him out, and, you know, you spoil him and you don't discipline him, and, you know, they all put the blame on me.
Yeah.
And I did. I felt like I was failing him, and I didn't know how to fix the situation. And when I realised, or when he got diagnosed, he was the eighth child to be diagnosed through the clinic, then I started to get a better understanding of FASD, and that it wasn't my fault, it wasn't anything that I was doing, but it was a brain injury that he had due to the drinking of the alcohol in his mother's pregnancy.
So it was quite a severe, I mean, she drank quite a lot, didn't she? Does that affect just how much the damage is because of the level of alcohol?
They say that there's, or what we actually say in our support group, there's no safe amount of alcohol in pregnancy, because, you know, there is no safe amount. You don't know whether it's 1, 2, 20 or 100, you know. If you have no alcohol at all, then you're not going to have any have any of these problems with your baby, but there is no safe amount.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that we've learned. And we've had some people say, you know, like, they might have only had a few drinks before they even found out they were pregnant, and they've stopped. But we have some that those couple of drinks in the early part of the pregnancy was enough to cause the FASD in some of these kids.
And it's interesting, you did mention your adult son before. When did you start to... It was only when you had your nephew that you started to realise that one of your sons actually had a lot of these symptoms as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was actually having some training done with Ian Russell, and I never looked too much into the adult side of FASD, because when I was learning, and I'm still learning, all about, you know, how it affects these young people and the children and disabilities they can face in life, I didn't even want to look to what the future held for him, because I was struggling to deal with his everyday life.
Mm.
And once I started reading the adult part of it, when I was doing this training with Anne, and a part on there was saying how, you know, in the first 16 or 20 days of conception is when damage can be done to the face or the brain as things are forming.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh, my God, it all fell into place, because I was 6 weeks pregnant before I found out with him. And even though I had never heard of FASD, knew nothing about it, when I fell pregnant with him and I did not know, and I was drinking a lot and rebelling and doing what a lot of teens do. The day that I found out I was pregnant, I stopped drinking.
Yes.
And it was only because I didn't want to damage my baby or risk doing any damage to it, just through alcohol, but not knowing about the FASD. But because there's no clinics here that diagnose adults, he has every single solitary symptom
right.
in the adult. He struggles with day-to-day life and relationships and work and social things. And he has suspected FASD, but we can't say it's full because the adult can't be diagnosed here.
Right.
But I know in my heart that's exactly what he has.
Growing up, did he display a lot of the same characteristics that you're seeing in your nephew?
He did. He used to... I'm lucky because this one doesn't steal or do things, but my older son did things different as well, because, you know, there can be different things. It's sort of like they're all different, but they're all the same. They do different things, but in a lot of ways they're kind of the same, if that makes sense. And I noticed with my oldest son, when he was around even 12 and 13, he was stealing money. I only found out a few months ago, probably about 12 months ago, that he was actually smoking marijuana at that age. I had no idea. And he was a handful. And I think because at that time I was in a relationship that was violent, I thought that he was just acting out through that.
Right.
And I've sort of... thought a lot about him over the years of growing up, and it just answers every single question of what was wrong with him. And, you know, I wish I had have known back then what I know now to help him, because he might not struggle so much in life as what he does now.
So when you say struggling, I mean, what sort of barriers are sort of put up in front of him?
Well, he has a lot of problems with reading, with writing. He's got ADHD as well. He has poor concentration. He can't hold down a job. There's domestic violence often in his relationship. He's not good at mixing with people. He's very easily led and gets into the wrong group. He has depression. He has times of trying suicide. He has drug and alcohol issues. Mm. He just struggles day to day with everything.
Do you think, growing up, because you didn't know what was causing this, was it a different situation to your nephew where it was easier to blame him, or it must have been very hard for you, wouldn't it have been?
It was extremely hard back then, and especially being, I had two younger children that I also had no alcohol with them. I was not drinking, so I knew that he was different. But with this one that I've got now that I'm raising, the huge difference is the early diagnosis. So I know what to do.
Yeah.
And I'm still learning what to do and how to do things with him. If I could have done what I'm doing now back, 30 years ago,
yeah,
I believe that outcome would have been different, because I was blaming him for being a brat and not understanding, what was going on. He couldn't communicate with me. He used to struggle to tell me how he was feeling.
Yeah.
And I did. I just thought that he was just being a brat of a child. I had no idea, and I have a lot of guilt with that, but I can't dwell on the guilt. I try to help him now, but he still has a lot of issues now. He's always going to have those issues. And what I have to do is try and be there for him now, and I've learned to speak to him different, to communicate with him different. Because I have learnt to do this with my youngest son also, and that's how we kind of do it.
It must really frustrate you, because you said that you didn't know you were pregnant until you were 6 weeks pregnant, and then you stopped drinking completely. And there's this sort of myth in Australia that, one drink is okay. It's okay to have a little bit. It's not going to hurt the baby, but obviously it does, regardless of whichever stage you drink or how much you drink. Does that frustrate you, that sort of that myth that keeps coming up?
Well, that's exactly right. And, there's still GPs today, particularly the older doctors who have been around for a long time, who say, oh, it's okay to have one or two, but it's not okay. There is no safe amount to have in a pregnancy. Not one. Absolutely none. And the sad thing is that people may be pregnant and not aware that they're pregnant. They could even be on a honeymoon or, celebrating a birthday or just on holidays or anything, and, just be having those few drinks or a social drink, and you just don't know you're pregnant, And this happens. But the most important thing that we have in our support group as well is that we have no judging to the mother, and we have no blame, no shame motto, because what I believe is that mothers deliberately do not set out to hurt their children when they're drinking. A lot of them just don't know what damage that the alcohol can do. And being a bio mother myself, as well as having my youngest son now, I know that I would never, ever have hurt him deliberately, because, you think the mother rubs their belly, they talk to their belly, they love that baby, and they want to give the best start to life that they can. But when you go to some GPs and they say, oh, it's okay, to have a couple, just, don't go over, one or two wines whenever is okay, but it's not. I think that all these doctors, all of GPs, all need updating and being told, no, there is no safe amount. Don't say it's okay to have one or two, because it's not.
Yeah.
I don't think you should play Russian roulette with your child in your pregnancy, because, you might have one. You could have two, three, four children that don't have it, and then you continue to drink, because we hear it all the time.
Yeah.
And then that next baby might be born totally different, have the FASD. And what I say to people, do you really want to play Russian roulette with your baby? It's just not worth it. It really is not worth it, because I watch my sons struggle every single day in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not his fault. That's the thing. It's just
Oh, no way in the world. Absolutely not. Not one piece. They're born innocent. It has nothing to do with anything that the kids do. It's just what happens in the pregnancy with alcohol.
We might go to a break now. When I come back, I actually want to talk to you more about your support group and where other mothers can go to actually find out more about FASD. So we'll just quickly cut to a song now.
Okay.
Denise Hudson. I'm here with Sam Pennell, who's running a support group, Queensland-based FASD support group, and we're talking about fetal alcohol syndrome disorder this morning. Good morning. Welcome back to Let's Talk. Today we're speaking about a very important issue, and it's one we've continually discussed on this program. It's fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, but we've largely talked about it in an Aboriginal context and talked about the impact it can have on our communities and is having on our communities all around the country. But as we know, it's largely an Australia-wide problem. It's become a very common problem. In fact, the figures are almost alarming. A conservative estimate is that 30 babies per day are being born with FASD in Australia. So it strikes me that it's important we open up the conversation and hear stories from Australians all across the country, really, about the impacts of FASD, because it really is an Australian problem at the moment. And we're talking to Sam Pennell, who runs the Queensland FASD Support Group. And it actually looks after her young son has been diagnosed with FASD, and her older son, she believes, is undiagnosed FASD. And Sam, I just wanted to ask you, what are the sort of problems that your young son sort of has trouble dealing with on a day-to-day basis?
He has a lot of problems with pretty much everything. Every morning when he gets up, he'll forget to go to the toilet most days unless I remind him. He doesn't remember to brush his teeth. I'll tell you the best way I describe living with him every day is if people have watched the 51st Date, or some people say Groundhog Day. I haven't seen that one, but and the Rain Man. They are the best way I describe our daily life. Every morning when he'll get dressed for school, he'll come out and he'll say, "Can you roll my collar?" And I'll say, "We did this yesterday." He said, "I don't remember." So I have to teach him every morning how to roll down his collar. You cannot give him more than one instruction at a time because he becomes very overwhelmed and gets anxious. So we have to do one instruction at a time. And sometimes if he doesn't do it right there and then, he forgets. As well as his ADHD, you know, he has dyslexia as well. He has learning difficulties. He has delayed motor skills. He struggles to organise himself in school, at getting dressed, at anything. If we're going to go somewhere, he can't organise himself. He gets upset really easy. The littlest, tiniest thing could be a trigger for him, and he can't bring himself down from where he is. I have to be there. It's probably best to say that I'm his external brain, because there's so many things he's so smart in some ways, but there's other things that he struggles in day to day. He has a lot of trouble writing, and unless you tell him something, he just will not do it. It's an example too is that you can say to him, when you're going to cross a road, what are you doing? He'll tell you stop, but at the time he'll forget, he'll just keep going.
Right. That's very dangerous. I mean, you must worry on a daily basis.
Exactly. He has to be watched non-stop. He does things that he doesn't understand danger to. He climbs things and doesn't realise or understand danger. He has no time or money concept. It's like when he has a bath at night, I've got to say to him, do not stand on the bath every night. I have to say that to him. And do you know, one night I forgot, and then he was swinging on the curtain rail and he fell, and thank God he wasn't hurt. And I said to him, you know, I tell you every night, don't swing on the rail. He said, but you forgot tonight. And little things like that,
yeah.
It's not his fault, but it's frustrating for me because I have to remember, I have to be that external brain to tell him every single solitary thing to do because he kind of can't think for himself what he's got to do next. And so it is a 24/7 job.
What happens when he goes to school? Are the teachers aware? Does he have trouble when he actually just leaves home?
What was the last sentence, sorry?
Oh, sorry. Does he have trouble when he goes to school?
Well, he gets to his classroom and he has the best teacher. She is so supportive. Our school I've been really happy with since he was diagnosed with FASD. Our school has bent over backwards to help him. So they are exactly aware of what he's like and he has so much support in there. His teacher is absolutely brilliant with him. So he struggles with things and that. His teacher's given him a calculator for math because we know that he's in grade four and he's still at a grade one level. He'll more than likely never be very good at math or get through life, like most kids do. The learning with the math. So he uses a calculator. He's been taught how to do that. So his way in life will more likely be using a calculator to help him with math or sums, whatever he needs to add up through his adult life. But that's okay because that's how he'll cope. That's how he'll do it. And that's fine. Whatever works for him, and it just takes the pressure off of him of having to struggle and learn the way that the other kids do. We just do the things that are easiest for him, if that makes sense.
It really stresses the importance of diagnosing FASD, I think, especially when you consider the school environment. I just think of the number of kids who've grown up not being able to have that support and who've just been told they're stupid or they're just disruptive and being punished for it.
Exactly. Like my oldest son, it was exactly the same with him. Like he was always in trouble, and I didn't know then why. And his learning was so severe. And they used to say, if he wasn't so big, we'd keep him down. And I remember one day in grade seven, I was checking his maths homework, and I said, "You don't know these answers." He said, "Yes, I did. They're all right." So I said, okay, and I asked him. He had no idea what it was, and he ended up telling me he had cheated. So the next day I rang his teacher and I said, look, I need you to be aware that he's cheating. How's he going to learn by cheating? And I could not believe his teacher turned around and said, oh, we know he is, but it builds his confidence. So he's too big to keep down. We'll let him go through.
So they weren't even going to help him. They're just basically saying, we'll just let you go by because it's too much trouble.
Exactly. And he left school in grade nine because he was always in trouble. He was getting suspended. He was skipping school. He couldn't learn. He wanted to fight people. And I think, too, now that I know, he was frustrated, absolutely frustrated, because he had trouble trying to explain to me what was going on, but I didn't understand what was going on as well.
Yeah.
And it's really, really heartbreaking when I think now, because I can understand with this youngest son, because I talk to him different, I communicate with him different.
Yeah.
I keep the words short and simple and straight to the point in the sentence. Instead of taking, 20 words to explain a sentence, I might put it into four so I don't lose his concentration. And this is what I've started talking to my oldest son as well now. Just get to the point. Don't have a long conversation because he'll lose his concentration along the way.
You mentioned before that your youngest son, all the difficulties, he has ADHD and learning development issues. I was reading a lot of that actually can be traced back to FASD, and that sort of is the precursor, I guess. It's a consequence of FASD. Is that what has happened with your youngest son?
Yeah, it is. Everything that's in there is exactly how it is for him. And as I said, if we hadn't have had the diagnosis of FASD, it's such a broad thing where everything comes underneath it.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes you just get a little diagnosis of something and then another little diagnosis of something, like he was diagnosed with the ADHD first, but I said, yeah, that's good with his hyperactivity. Okay, I figured that, but it's all the other bits and pieces you just can't add up to until you get to the FASD right at the very top, and then everything comes underneath it.
Yeah.
And then it all makes sense of that one big diagnosis to the little things, you know, the learning disabilities, the dyslexia. Not all kids have dyslexia, but with the ADHD and the motor skills and coordination and no time concepts of money and things like I was saying before, all that for him comes underneath the FASD.
And it's important to stress to our listeners as well, this falls on a spectrum as well, so different children might have different problems stemming from maybe the amount of alcohol that's been drunk during pregnancy. So it's a spectrum, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And that's why we always have to say that there is no safe amount of alcohol in pregnancy. You know, if you're going to get pregnant or you're planning on getting pregnant, everybody needs to stop drinking first. And do you know, it doesn't affect just one particular person, you know, whether you're American, Chinese, English, Aboriginal, Australian, anyone. FASD will hit anybody.
Yeah.
It doesn't discriminate. It's anyone.
Now, you've been involved in a support group, I'm guessing based around the Gold Coast, but can you tell me a little bit about what led you to start this Queensland FASD support group?
Yeah, when he was diagnosed in August 2014, he was the eighth child through the clinic diagnosed. And I remember, you know, like I was absolutely shattered when I heard that he had this permanent brain injury. And I was talking to the social worker and she was brilliant. And I said to her, who do I talk to now? And she said, oh, you know, you can talk with me. And I said, but I need to talk to other parents who have got this because I'd not heard of it before. And I needed to talk to someone who was in the same boat that I was, who felt like I was. Because I just felt my world had fallen apart. Mm. And she was great. And she said, look, Sam, there is no one. There is no support groups. And I said, well, you know what? I need to be heard. I need to start a support group. Because the thing is that I don't want other parents to feel like I did so alone. Because I couldn't really talk to my family about it. Because a lot of them didn't believe, and they still don't believe, in FASD. And a lot of people can be, if I don't mean this in a bad way, ignorant or arrogant on FASD, thinking that, you know, just because you have one or two drinks, you're fine or whatever. But I needed to talk to parents who felt like I did. So she helped me by contacting people and asking if they were interested. And we ended up, I started this group, and now I have two beautiful admins who work with me, and we have about 200 and maybe 30 members now.
Wow, and that's all over Queensland, is it?
Well, yeah, but we've also had people come in from England and the UK and New Zealand as well, who have joined the group, because we hold monthly meetings every fourth Wednesday of the month, and for people who want to come for face-to-face meetings to have a talk, to not feel so alone. But we also have the support group on Facebook, so is that if somebody wants to talk or just needs support or just need a bit of guidance, or they're having a bad day and just need a bit of a shoulder to lean on, you know, just to perk them up.
Yeah, right.
And that's what that we're all there for. And, you know, I find the people on there are a beautiful bunch of people. We've had no problems. There's no judging, no blaming. We have foster parents and carers and grandparents and and people themselves living with FAS every day, who they are brilliant because they actually can give us a bit of guidance of what we face as well and what other people face of how a person with FASD feels as an adult.
Yeah, right.
And how they live today. So that's how the group started, was I started it, and I'm so proud of how far it's taken off. And with the admin ladies that I have that work with me, they are the best. They have helped bring this group up as well as what it's going. And also Anne Russell, she has been one of our biggest supporters. She runs the Rafter Foundation, and she has just been the best support for us as well of helping us get the group set up because she has her own group.
It must, hearing that there's so many members already in your support group, I mean, it must almost shock you that it seems so common. I mean, that's what people are saying, that's a lot more common than we even know about. There's no real statistics on it, really.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, I was talking to Anne, and I've spoken to her a few times about this, and you know, we sort of said how many people in Australia, you know, have actually got AFASD, but she said there's no studies ever done here.
Right.
But in the US studies, like in kind of a similar environment, we should have at least 500,000 is a consecutive figure in Australia, and that's huge, huge, huge.
It's shocking, yeah.
And there's so many adults and probably older children, and I reckon a lot of them too that are in the jail,
yep,
who have actually got FASD, but due to their age and it not being as well known and diagnosed like many years ago, that's probably what's wrong with so many of the kids of today.
Yep, I would agree. I just think, particularly looking at your story and looking at the difference, the generational change in you knowing about it with your youngest son and then looking at what happened to your oldest son, I think it's really sad that a lot of these problems are obviously linked to FASD, and yet really as a society we're not dealing with it. I mean, I think it's, you're talking about a lot of your family members flat out don't believe you. I mean, it's that sort of societal sort of amnesia, or they don't want to listen to this problem, don't they?
That's exactly right. And you know, like a lot of times I really feel alone, as in where the family is. I have one sister that's a bit supportive, you know, but I feel for me personally, you know, I thank God for my group and for the friends that I've made through there. Adults and stuff for clinics, for adults to even be diagnosed, to help them get on the right path, because you know, too many are just left in the system and people just think that they're bad and they're bad news and whatever, but, you know, they need help as well and they're just kind of forgotten about.
We talk about, I remember I was researching a bit about this, and they talk about the fact that FASD really, it's almost like a physical disability, really, even though it's brain damage. What would you like to see happen? I mean, do you think the federal government should be doing something more on this? Or
I think they should. You know, they spend a lot of money on things that I don't think are important. But this is something that's going to affect our future kids and the generations ahead. And they need to start educating people now. You know, we are so far behind all the other countries. They need to start educating. You know, I reckon that they should even have it on bottles of beer or wine, you know, that do not drink in pregnancy. There's no safe amount, you know, some sort of a labelling, you know, like they did on cigarettes.
They have babies on cigarettes, actually.
That's exactly right. And they show what can happen to the baby if the mother smokes on the cigarettes. They need to do this with alcohol because alcohol causes a lifelong disability.
Yeah.
And it is absolutely heartbreaking when you watch your children struggle every single solitary day in life, and they will for the rest of their life to live in an environment, you know, where they're accepted and you know, when people don't think, you know, you just need to, they just need to bring out more advertising on that, commercials on TV, open more clinics to diagnose, because I know with our clinic they can only go to the age of 10. They're diagnosed between, I think it's 6 and 10. Yeah. They need more clinics, and the clinic that Dr. Shelton runs in Southport, you know, they are so booked out down there up until 2020 or something.
Wow. Just for parents coming in wanting to get diagnosis.
Yeah, and the waiting lists are so long. We need more clinics for children to be diagnosed, and for older kids to be diagnosed, and for adults to be diagnosed. And, you know, it's so late for a lot of these older ones and for the adults, but they need help. They need something for people to understand them, for specialists or, you know, like special doctors or psychologists to understand. And they need so much more education on what alcohol does and to help these that are already affected.
Well, you run that support group. I'm just wondering if anyone's listening today, what would you sort of, and sort of think, oh, no, I might have to go get my child to the clinic or something like that. What would you sort of recommend for a lot of people who might be listening today and might want to get further help?
Well, I know that they're still taking things, numbers and that through our clinic. I know the waiting list is long, but, you know, if you've got littlies that you suspect that could have it, you know, you've just got to get onto the waiting list. I know, like with Anne, with the Rafter Foundation, Anne knows different places as well that aren't on the Gold Coast that diagnose, where I personally don't know those. I'm just from the Gold Coast, and our group's only been going for a year and a bit. So, but Anne's been there for a long time, and she knows all of those ones that can help people go to different places, you know, kind of over Australia for diagnosis.
Yeah, so if we can put up, where would we go to find out that information, or where can they go to access your support group specifically?
Facebook group, it's called the QLD, Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorders Support Group. And we also have a website, which is qldfasd.wix.com/QLDFASD. And Anne's support group, she has the Rafter Foundation. So that is the Russell Family Fetal Alcohol Disorders Association. And Anne's phone number is 0412-55-0540.
And we'll put up all those details on our website as well, 989fm.com.au, on the podcast page or on Facebook as well, so you can find that out if you'd like more information on it. And I really want to thank you today, Sam, for coming on to share a personal story, because I think that's the most impacting and it's what Australia has to hear. So I really appreciate you coming on and letting our listeners know a bit more about FASD today.
Thank you for that, Amy. And it was really good to talk to you. And, yeah, hopefully, you know, the governments and the alcohol companies and whoever else is out there, the politicians, can start coming on board and putting money where it needs to help all these kids and future kids in diagnosing the FASD. And all these early interventions just makes so much difference.
Yeah, and I think it's important to put the pressure on them as well. So I really appreciate you coming on today, because I think just raising awareness puts pressure on government as well.
Exactly.
So that's great. Thank you so much for that, Sam, and we'll hopefully talk to you soon.
Okay, Dol. Thank you.
Thanks for that.
Bye.
That was Sam Pennell, who runs the Queensland FASD support group, and it was something that she came up with largely because she didn't get any support, not a great deal of support, when she found out about her child and her eldest child, who she believes also may have underdiagnosed FASD. We'll go back to a song, Shelley Morris, If It Wasn't For You.